Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. ಶಂಕರಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಸದಸ್ಯರಿ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಅಭಯ ಚರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾನಂದ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಿಕಿ ಜಯಂತಿ ಪ್ರವಿಷ್ಣೋ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವೃತಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಸದಸ್ಯರಿ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಭಕ್ತ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಿಕಿ ಅನಂತ ಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ವೃಂದಕಿ ರಾಮಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶಿಲ ಹರಿದಾಸ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್ಕಿ ಪ್ರೇಮ ಸಹೋ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದಕಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋಪ ಗೋವಿನಾಥ ಶ್ಯಾಮಕುಂಡ ರಾಧಾ ಕುಂಡಗಿರಿ ಗೋವರ್ಧಾನಕಿ ವೃಂದಾವನ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಾಯಪೌರ್ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಧುರಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ್ಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ದ್ವಾರಕಾಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಗಂಗಮಾಯಿಕಿ ಯಮುನ ಮಾಯಿಕಿ ತುಳಸಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಭಕ್ತಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಸಮವೇದ ಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದಕಿ ಗೌರ್ ಪ್ರೇಮನಂದಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ All glories, all glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gaurangi. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namam Nishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimade Bhaktivedanda Swami Nirinamini Namaste Saraswadevim Gauravani Prajarini Narvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyatya Deshatarini ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವದೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವದೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವದೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಸಂಸಾರ ಸಾಗರೇ ಮಗ್ನಂ ದೀನಂ ಮಾಂ ಕರುಣಾನಿಧಿ ಕರ್ಮಗ್ರಾಹ್ಯ ಗೃಹೀತಾಂಗಂ ಮಾಮುದ್ಧರ ಭವಾರ್ಣವಾಲ್. ಶ್ರೀಮಲ್ಭಾಗವದಾಖ್ಯೋಯಂ ಪ್ರತ್ಯಕ್ಷ ಕೃಷ್ಣಮೇವ ಹಿ ಸ್ವೀಕೃತೋಸಿ ಮಯಾ ನಾಥ ಮುಕ್ತ್ಯರ್ಥಂ ಭವಸಾಗರೇ. ಮನೋರಥೇ ಮದೀಯೋಯಂ ಸಫಲಾ ಸರ್ವದಾ ತ್ವಯ ನಿರ್ವಿಘ್ನೇನೈವ ಕರ್ತವ್ಯಂ ದಾಸೋಹಂ ತವ ಕೇಶವಾಂ. ಭವೇ ಭವೇ ಯಥಾ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಪದಯೋರ್ಸವ ಜಾಯದೆ ತಥಾ ಕುರುಷ್ವ ದೇವೇಶ ನಾಥಸ್ತ್ವನ್ನೋ ಯದ ಪ್ರಭೋ. ನಾಮ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನಂ ಯಸ್ಯ ಸರ್ವಭಾವ ಪ್ರಣಾಶನಂ ಪ್ರಣಾಮೋ ದುಃಖ ಶಮನಂ ತಂ ನಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಂ ಪರಂ. ಜನ್ಮಾದ್ಯಸ್ಯ ಯದೋನ್ವಯಾದಿದರದಸ್ ಚಾತೇಷ್ವಭಿಜ್ಞಸ್ವರಾನ್ ತೇನೇ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ಹೃದಯ ಆದಿಗವಯೇ ಮುಹ್ಯಂದಿಯಲ್ ಸೂರಯಃ. ತೇಜೋ ವಾರಿಮೃದಂ ಯಥಾ ವಿನಿಮಯೋ ಯತ್ರ ತ್ರಿಸರ್ಗೋ ಮೃಷ ಧಾಮ್ನಾ ಸ್ವೇನ ಸದಾ ನಿರಸ್ತಕುಹಕಂ ಸತ್ಯಂ ಪರಂ ಧೀಮಹಿ. ಧರ್ಮ ಪ್ರೋಜ್ಜಿತ ಕೈದವೋತ್ರ ಪರಮೋ ನಿರ್ಮಲ್ಸರಾಣಾಂ ಸದಾಂ ವೇದ್ಯಂ ವಾಸ್ತವಮತ್ರ ವಸ್ತು ಶಿವದಂ ತಾಪತ್ರಯೋನ್ಮೂಲನಂ. ಶ್ರೀಮಲ್ಭಾಗವದೇ ಮಹಾಮುನಿ ಕೃತೇ ಕಿಂವಾಪರೈ ಈಶ್ವರ ಸದ್ಯೋ ಹೃದ್ಯ ವರುಧ್ಯ ನೇತ್ರ ಕೃತಿವಿ ಶುಶ್ರೂಷುಭಿ ತಲ್ಕ್ಷಣಾಲ್. ನಿಗಮಗಲ್ಪದರೋರ್ಗಲಿದಂ ಫಲಂ ಶುಕಮುಖಾದಮೃತದ್ರವ ಸಂಯುಧಂ ಪಿಬದ ಭಾಗವತಂ ರಸಮಾಲಯಂ ಮುಹುರಹೋ ರಸಿಗಾ ಭುವಿ ಭಾವುಗಾಃ. ಸಚ್ಚಿದಾನಂದರೂಪಾಯ ವಿಶ್ವೋಲ್ಪತ್ಯಾದಿ ಹೇದವೇ ತಾಪತ್ರಯ ವಿನಾಶಾಯ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ವಯಂ ನಮಃ. ಯಂ ಪ್ರವ್ರಜಂದಂ ಅನುಭೇದಮಭೇದಕೃತ್ಯಂ ದ್ವೈವಾಯನೋ ವಿರಹಗಾದರಮಾಜುಹಾವ ಪುತ್ರೇದಿ ತನ್ಮಯದಯಾ ತರವೋಭಿನೀದು ತಂ ಸರ್ವಭೂತ ಹೃದಯಂ ಮುನಿಂ ಆನದೋಸ್ಮಿ. ಯಸ್ವಾನುಭಾವಮಖಿಲ ಶ್ರುತಿಸಾರಮೇಕಂ ಅಧ್ಯಾತ್ಮದೀಪಂ ಅತಿಥಿತೀರ್ಷದಂ ತಮೋಂಧಂ സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണ ഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനം ഉപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം. നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയിൽ. കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കളവേണു കൊണിതാദൃതാനനിന്ദോഹ മമ വാചി വിജംഭദാ മുരാരേ മധുരിന്ന കനികാവി കാവികാവി. നമാവും വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി ഇതി നാമിനേ. നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യ ദേശധാരിണേ ശ്രീമല് ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ. വന്ദേ നന്ദം വ്രജസ്ത്രീണാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ണശ യാസാം ഹരിഗതോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദി ഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാണവേ നമ. പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിത ചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദയീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായം അതിസുന്ദര മന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശ മനിഷം പ്രതിഭാവയാമി. കോമളം കുജയൻ വേണും ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമ. മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കം ലംഘയനേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം. ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ. ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദം. സോ വി വെർ ഡിസ്കസിംഗ് ലാസ്റ്റ് സൺഡേ ഫ്രം ദി 8th കാന്റോ ഓഫ് ദി ശ്രീമദ് ഭാഗവതം വേർ the churning of the milk ocean happened, and in that process of churning the milk ocean so many wonderful objects came out from the milk ocean, and in the Shrimad Bhagavatam they are listed one after the other, starting with the Kamadhenu. Prior to that, as we saw before, that when the milk ocean was churned, what is known as kalakudam, the poison came out from there. It's also known as halahalam. In the Bhagavatam, both names are used, kalakudam and halahalam. Both are the same thing. It came from the from the ocean. So Lord Shiva decided that he would when the situation was very serious, that all the demigods approached Lord Vishnu, who was present there as the controller of the whole operations. And Mahavishnu suggested to the demigods that they should approach Mahadeva or Lord Shiva and obtain his help, because he has promised help during the process of churning this ocean. So when the demigods approached Lord Shiva was happy to help them by coming to accept this whole Kalakuda Visham, which was taken into the hand, just like we take the Charanamrutam in the hand and we take it. The whole poison was brought into a small few drops in the hand, and Mahadeva, Lord Shiva, has accepted that as though he was accepting the prasadam of the Charanamrutam, of washing the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Krishna. So that is the way Lord Shiva is. That anything, it doesn't require much, anything he can, by his yogic power, he was able to bring the whole thing into a few drops and take it as a poison. Although it's poisonous, he has taken it inside. Now, the churning of this milk ocean was done basically for three main reasons. That is also mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, why the ocean was churned like this. The first and foremost of all is that Krishna wanted to have some play. He wanted to play something, do something about it. He just wanted to have some fun. And this is how when the Supreme Lord is having fun, it's different, not like us. It's done in such a massive scale that he decided to churn the milk ocean. Unlike us, we have to, we don't have any capacity to enjoy like the way Krishna wants to do it. So Krishna decided to do it in this way, that he wanted to churn the milk ocean. That was one of the reasons attributed for these operations. Secondly, beyond that, all the opulences that were lost after Durvasa Muni has cursed the demigods, when all the opulences disappeared, they have disappeared into the ocean of milk. Kamadhenu, Airavadam, Uchaishravas, and all the other, and Mahalakshmi including, has gone and hid themselves in this ocean of milk. So to retrieve them back, Supreme Personality decided, Krishna decided that he will churn this ocean just for this purpose. This is the second reason. And the third reason, which is also very important, is when the demigods were cursed by Durvasa Muni, the only way to bring them back to life was to from their unfortunate condition was to offer them the nectar that has come out from the ocean of milk. So these three things, to get the nectar from the ocean of milk, to bring back all the opulences that were lost, to retrieve them back from the ocean, and also Krishna wanted to just to enjoy and play himself alone, along with the other demigods and the demons. So he decided to bring everybody into it, and that is another reason given to the for this churning process or the churning activity. So anyway, these three things were there. So in addition to that, when the ocean of milk was churned, from that all these wonderful objects came up. Like Kamadhenu came, and Airavadam, Uchaishravas, and also Parijadam, Kaustubham, and Alakshmi and Mahalakshmi came out much later. So every time when different objects came from the ocean of milk, there are different things attached to it. They're mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam very clearly about it. For example, when the ocean poison came out from the milk, from the ocean of milk, when it was taken out, Lord Shiva, to save this whole creation, he decided to consume that just like a few drops of Charanamritam in the hand. You don't require much. It is also Krishna's mercy, because after all it has come out when Krishna has churned the ocean. So that's also Krishna's prasadam. Although it is poison, Mahadeva, Lord Shiva decided to accept that. It is like this, that all valuable things you don't require very much. A few drops is enough. For example, in the Bhajagovindam, it says about Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita kinjidadhida Ganga jalamapi kanika pida. Bhagavad Gita, you don't have to study. It says there that even if one verse in the Bhagavad Gita, if you can understand and fully absorb that, Bhagavad Gita kinjidadhida Ganga jalam api kaniga pidam. Ganga jalam, the water from the Ganges, you don't require so much. Even a few drops of Ganges water is sufficient to purify somebody. So this is the potency of all the great objects in this world. Ganga jalam is like that, and similarly Bhagavad Gita is like that. Similarly, it also says that if you are glorifying Krishna, even whatever you surrender to Krishna, that ultimately you don't have to discuss your death with the god of death or Yama. Yama Dharma Raja, you don't have to any discussion about your death. That means once for all, you are freed from the cycle of birth and death. This is how the Acharya Swamiji says about this in the Bhajagovindam. So this is the system, that anything that is great, like Gangajalam or the Bhagavad Gita, they do not require that. You don't have to master everything. Even a little bit from that ocean, that is enough for us to sarvopanishado gavo dugdham gopalanandana partho valsa sudhir bhokta dugdham gidamradam mahal. In the glorifying Bhagavad Gita, that is how it's mentioned, sarvopanishado gavo dugdham gopalanandana partho valsa sudhir bhokta dugdham gidamradam mahal. Bhagavad Gita's greatness is explained that it is like using Arjuna is a calf, Krishna has milked the essence of all the Vedic literature and condensed in the Bhagavad Gita for the benefit of the human society. So this is how the great sages talk about these great objects like Bhagavad Gita and Ganges. So anyway, here what we find is that Mahalakshmi, before when this poison came out from the milk ocean, Lord Shiva accepted that, and that relieved the distress of this whole world. That is how Bhagavatam says about that, relieve the distress of the whole world, because Lord Shiva has accepted that into his own hands. Now, if you go further from there, then one after the other, different objects came out from that. The first one was to come out was Kamadhenu. The demigods accepted that. Then Ucheshravas came. Ucheshravas was on request from the Supreme Lord. Krishna requested the demigods to hand that over to the demons. So demons took that away, Ucheshravas, the horse. And the Airavadam, the elephant, when it came out, it was handed over to the demigods. So like this, different things. Then Kaustubam came. When Kaustubam came, Kaustubam, which is the neck, which is the jewel in the Supreme Lord's neck, when Krishna looked at it, both the demigods and the demons realized that probably Krishna likes to have it. So they decided to make it a necklace out of it and put it on the Supreme Lord's neck, on Krishna's neck, which stays there as a decoration for Supreme Lord. So like this, different things came out. And then you will see there that after that, what happens was that before the arrival of the Mahalakshmi arrived, everybody started looking at Mahalakshmi, seeing her beauty. Everyone was obviously very much fascinated with her, by her beauty. Mahalakshmi is so beautiful that both the demigods and the demons have looked towards her, and they would like to have her with them. But unfortunately, because it was a very complicated situation, the sages who were present there, we discussed this in the last Sunday, that there were so many personalities in the assembly who wanted to marry Mahalakshmi. We were saying that Durvasa Muni wanted to marry Lord and there were so many other qualified persons in the assembly there. But Indra was there, and then Lord Shiva was there, and Krishna was also there. So Mahavishnu was present there. So when they all wanted to marry her, in fact it began with Durvasa Muni, but prior to Durvasa Muni she found some fault in him. So she refused not to accept Durvasa Muni. Then she looked at Indra. Indra also she found a fault. She kept away from him. Similarly, in the Bhagavatam, there is a number of persons listed there whom, for one reason or the other, Mahalakshmi has rejected. For example, Brihaspati and Shukracharya was there. Brihaspati is the spiritual master of the demigods. Shukracharya is the spiritual master of the demons. They were both there. Both of them are very highly learned in all everything related to sacrifices. They are both super, first class personalities. Mahalakshmi found a fault with them as well. What was the fault? She realized that both of them, Brihaspati and Shukracharya, are greedy. That is why they have accepted this priesthood. Otherwise, why should they do this? This was her viewpoint. Mahalakshmi said that both Brihaspati and Shukracharya, they have taken the priesthood, Purohit's jobs for the demigods and the demons. No, I will not marry them, she said. So you can see that Mahalakshmi rejected them as well. Mahalakshmi is another name. She is called as the goddess of fortune. Prabhupada calls them as the goddess of fortune. Because all the Aishwaryams, all the opulences, she is the Adhishtadri Devata, or the predominating deity of all the opulences in the creation. And that you will see later on in different instances. When Mahalakshmi came as Rukmini Devi and lived in Dwaraka, how opulent Dwaraka became. And at different instances, Mahalakshmi has shown her this unusual potency of making places opulent with her presence. So somehow or the other, in this instance also what you find is that when Mahalakshmi decided that she will not accept Shukracharya and Brihaspati for one reason. Who else was there in the assembly? The four Kumaras were there. Sanaga, Sanandana, Sanadana and Sanat Kumara. The four Kumaras were present in the assembly. Mahalakshmi looked at them for a minute. After all, they were great sages. She pulled back again. She said, no, I will not marry them. Why? Because they are such sages who wanted to be situated always in the fully realized state. What do I do as a woman? This is what she thought. What have I got to do with these four Kumaras? What do I do if I marry them? She said, no, I will not marry them as well. Markandeya Muni was there. Markandeya Muni, she thought for a minute. Great sage, great personality. Srimad Bhagavatam glorifies Markandeya Muni. Purana Acharya, he is the Acharya of all the Puranas. And got all the knowledge in all the creation Markandeya Muni has got. Why? She has been blessed by Sri Parvati at one stage. What is that? Jnanam Traigaligam Brahman. That knowledge from the past, knowledge from the present, and knowledge from the future. All three of them, you will have it. And Purana Acharya Dastude in the Srimad Bhagavatam says that you will become the Acharya or the authority on all the Puranas. In fact, when Yudhishthira Maharaj was in the forest with all the other Pandavas, and also later on after the Rajasuya sacrifice, we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in many other places, Markandeya Muni was present in the association of the Pandavas and was reciting the story of Ramayanam for their pleasure. This is Markandeya Muni. So Markandeya Muni was there. When they saw Markandeya Muni's story will come later on in the 12th canto, there are about 4 chapters describing the glories of Markandeya Muni. Much later, at the very end of Srimad Bhagavatam, specifically spoken by Sula Goswami for the pleasure of the Shaunaga Rishi and all the other sages who were present in the Naimisharanyam. Why was it spoken? Only for one reason, that he is the authority of all the Puranas. Therefore, even though Sukadeva Goswami left and went back, still in the Srimad Bhagavatam you will find Sula Goswami specifically took time to speak to Shaunaga Rishi and others about the glories of Markandeya Muni. And that come Markandeya Rishi's greatness is explained later on. So Markandeya Rishi was there. And when Sri Mahalakshmi saw Markandeya Muni, she first thought, why shouldn't I marry him? But then she pulled back again. She said, no, Markandeya Muni is such a great personality. And if somebody is so saintly, what kind of householder life will I have? This is what Sri Mahalakshmi thought for a moment. So because of all these things, she had to reject everybody. And eventually, she found the most qualified person at that time, who was Lord Shiva. Nothing, no problem. Every way, austerities, penances, knowledge, and in realizations, in nothing, Lord Shiva was lacking anything. There also she found a fault. So, pyamangalaha. Bhagavatam says there's only one small problem she found with Lord Shiva. So, pyamangalaha. That there was lacking something in Lord Shiva, which she thought that Lord Shiva was not enough, opulent enough to live with her. In other words, Mahalakshmi's new point was, if a person is at home as a husband, he should have a little bit more material things with him and live little bit more opulent than the way Lord Shiva was conducting. So she rejected Lord Shiva also. Then who is left now? Only the Supreme Lord is there. So she turned around and looked at him. And she says there in the Bhagavatam, Sumangalaha, Sopyamangala, Sumangalaha. The next person he showed, every way is fine. There is nothing lacking. But there also she found something problem. What was that? Problem was that everybody wanted to marry Mahalakshmi. But there was no interest in Mahavishnu's side. On Vishnu, Vishnu has kept completely away from all these things. If Mahalakshmi wants to marry me, she can marry me. That was Mahavishnu's attitude. In other words, we were discussing last Sunday, what is renunciation means. Renunciation means this. In all circumstances, Krishna has no attraction to anything particularly. That renunciation which Krishna has exhibited, you will see throughout Srimad Bhagavatam. If you look at the way Krishna has dealt with different devotees at different times, you can see this Krishna's renunciation coming up every minute. In every dealing, what Krishna has spent the time with different devotees. At one point, if you see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you can find when Uddhava came to Vrindavanam and after Krishna and Balaram were taken to Mathura and Kamsa was killed, The promise Krishna has given to Mother Yashoda was that I will come back after Kamsa was the plan was not openly spoken to Yashoda, because if it was told, Yashoda would have probably had a heart attack. So Yashoda Bai was waiting on the understanding that Krishna and Balaram has gone to see the city, Mathura. And Nanda Maharaj was taking them around, he was going to bring them back. But Nanda Maharaj came back alone. Krishna and Balaram never came back. So how much you can imagine the mind, how much Yashoda Bai must have suffered at that time. That after so many years of austerities and penances, and with so much happiness, she had this one baby, Krishna. And Krishna was gone. And you won't find in the Srimad Bhagavatam any time Krishna has gone back to Vrindavan again. So this was the last instance after 12 years. After next time when Krishna, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna meets Mother Yashoda and Devaki for the marriage with Rukmini in Dwaraka. That is the next time when they come to see him for the marriage. Before that, they have not seen him. So you can see from all this that Krishna has no attachment to anything. Renunciation, as we say, is to the highest degree in Krishna. This is one instance. As well as one's own mother, Yashoda Bai, who looked after and loved Krishna to such an extent that Krishna has left her also and gone away. Now, you look at next instance in Srimati Radharani's case. Radharani, everyone says Radharani is Krishna's topmost devotee. There is no doubt about that. And this Srimati Radharani, who has pleased Krishna by all her different different services, what she has offered to Krishna, and the attachment and affection she has shown to her, even all the gopis in Vrindavanam elected her as their leader. That, and they recognized also, Uddhava also, when he came to Vrindavan, he said this, evam buktva evam buktya sakala bhavani nekshita nashrudava kim shastra ukhe kimihatabasa gopika bhyo namostu. What is the need to study everything, all the scriptures? Evam buktya sakala bhavani. That devotion, what Uddhava saw in Vrindavan among the gopis and specifically in Radharani, Uddhava says, nekshita nashrudava. I have not seen this, I have not heard it before. Why? Kim shastra ukhe kimiha tapasa gopikabhyo namostu. What is the need, Uddhava says, to study all this shastram? What is the need to perform so much austerities and penances? And that is when he said, vande nanda vrajastrinam. Initially, Uddhava paid obeisances to every individual gopi in Vrindavanam. He paid her obeisances to Srimati Radharani. But after seeing their devotion to Krishna, Uddhava recognized one thing. I am not even qualified to pay obeisances to them directly. Rather, I will pay my obeisances to one. Vande nandavrajastrinam padarenam abhishnasham. I am not even qualified to pay obeisances to one of the dust that has fallen from the feet of these gopis. Vande nanda vrajastrinam padarenum abhishnasha yasam harigado gedam punadi bhuvanatrayam. That these gopis, by glorifying and chanting the pastimes of Krishna, they have purified the whole world. This is how Uddhava spoke about them. So this Srimati Radharani, who even Uddhava has worshipped, Sudeva Goswami calls her as his spiritual master in the science of devotion. Anayaradhito nuinam Bhagavan Haririshwara. That Srimati Radharani, Sudeva Goswami considers as his spiritual master in the science of bhakti. And even to that Radharani, what did Krishna do? At one point in the Rasa dance, when Srimati Radharani wanted Krishna to take her on the back, Krishna disappeared from there also. So this is how Krishna is. And what to talk about Rukmini? Rukmini Devi, Krishna's eternal consort Mahalakshmi. At one point in Dwaraka, when the quarrel happened between Krishna and Rukmini Devi, it is in the Bhagavatam, you can read in the 6th chapter. The chapter begins with Karhijil Sukhamasinam. One day, happily situated at home, Krishna and Rukmini started quarreling each other. It's an argument that started. And at that point, Krishna said to Rukmini that if you marry even Shishupal, I don't mind that. This is what
Rukmini cried and cried such an extent and said to Krishna, whatever you may have said to me at the end, that what I have tasted so far by serving your lotus feet, if you reject me, what will be my situation? This is how a devotee thinks in relationship with Krishna. Rukmini felt so much. Rukmini said, whatever you have said, I can accept that. I don't have any problem with that. If that is the way you want to feel about me, this is Mahalakshmi. Mahalakshmi is Rukmini there. So Rukmini says there to Krishna, but that one thing you shouldn't have told me. Why? That you have asked me that I need not enjoy your association anymore, that I could go and marry anybody else, but what will happen to me? When that thought came to Rukmini Devi, immediately she collapsed there. So this is the situation with Rukmini. So now you can see how the devotees feel and how at different instances Mother Yashoda, Srimati Radharani, and here find Rukmini Devi. Now let's go to Uddhava. What happened to Uddhava? Uddhava when he heard in the assembly that Krishna has decided to depart, what was Uddhava's request to Krishna? Naham tavangrikamalam kshanardham abhigeshava tektum samulsahe nadha sadhamanayamamavim. That naham tavangrikamalam, Uddhava says to Krishna, it is difficult for me to be separated from you even for a second. Why? Kshanardham abhigeshavam. Even a small second away from you, because 112 years Uddhava has served Krishna with the greatest devotion and the greatest loyalty. Tektum samulsahe nadha. If you give up now, if you ask me to leave you now, sadhavanayamabi. Bhagavatam is so famous for these words in the Bhagavatam, what Uddhava has spoken. Sadhavanayamabi. Take me also along with you back to your planet. Krishna said no. So this is what is Krishna. We may think so many things about Krishna's renunciation is concerned. It doesn't matter who it is, whether it is Radharani or whether it is Uddhava, whether it is Rukmini or Mother Yashoda. Even such great personalities, such great souls, great devotees, they have experienced what do you feel when you separate from Krishna. So if they feel that, what's our situation? This is what one should think. If they can feel the separation from Krishna to such a length, to such a degree, what is our condition? So that is why that in dealing with Krishna, we have to always bear this in mind. Naham tavangriyamalam kshanardham abhikeshava tektum samulsahe nadha sodhamam nayamamavi. That even for a 1 second, that separation from Krishna, Uddhava could not imagine. Although at the very end of instructions to Uddhava, Krishna allowed him to go to Badrinath and told him that in due course you can come back to my spiritual world. But as far as Krishna's renunciation is concerned, you don't require any more proof that how renounced Krishna is. If he wants to renounce anybody, he can renounce anyone in this creation, whole creation. So what to talk about living entities like us? That's our position in relationship with Krishna. So anyway, here what we find is Mahalakshmi at that point experienced that when she came out, she was in all the demigods wanted her, all the demons wanted her. So in the Bhagavadam, you will find when Mahalakshmi appeared, there was a special ceremony there. The ceremony was that Mahalakshmi was bathed and properly dressed, and all the sages decided Mahalakshmi can marry anybody whom she wants, whether the demigods or the demons or anyone they want. And that is how this choice was given to her. Now, the way they glorified Mahalakshmi in the Srimad Bhagavatam is what is known as Shri Suktam. Shri Suktam means there is about, in the this is another important thing. Bhagavatam and Vedas have a very close relationship. We discussed this before also. The relationship is like this. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, almost all the major Vedic hymns referring to the Supreme Lord and to others like Lord Shiva and Mahalakshmi, they have all come in Srimad Bhagavatam as well. For example, in the fourth canto, you will see, we discussed this before, that when after the incident, what happened in Daksha's sacrifice, Brahma, all the demigods went to Lord Brahma for help along with all the other sages, and they together approached Lord Shiva in Kailas and they went to see him. So when they went to see him, Brahma saw there that Mahadeva, Lord Shiva, was sitting underneath the great tree, banyan tree. and instructing all the great sages on the science of spiritual life, the transcendental knowledge, he was talking to them. When they saw Lord Brahma coming there with all the great other sages and the demigods, Lord Shiva paid his obeisances to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma told Lord Shiva that there is no need for you, although Lord Shiva has come from Lord Brahma while taking birth. At the same time, he said, by tapas, by performances, penances, performing penances, austerities and knowledge, you have gone so far ahead of me that you do not require anymore to pay your respects to me in that way. Eventually, you will find that Lord Brahma glorified Lord Shiva in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That particular verses is exactly the one what represent in the Vedas as what is known as Sri Rudram. Sri Rudram, Adirudram, Maharudram, these are very, very famous Vedic hymns. All those Vedic hymns comes into Srimad Bhagavatam at some time or the other. So when Lord Shiva was glorified, Sri Rudram was chanted by Lord Brahma. Similarly, here you will find when Mahalakshmi was glorified, it was actually the Sri Suktam in the Vedic hymns that was used for glorifying Mahalakshmi in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Similarly, you will also notice another thing later on, that when Krishna appeared into this world, appeared into this planet, both Brahma, Shiva and Vishnu, all three of the trinities of this world, they all had to glorify Krishna before they, and that is how they made the contact with Krishna in Golokam. How did they do that? They used the Purusha Suktam prayers at that time. So all the Vedic hymns comes in the Srimad Bhagavatam at different instances. Sri Suktam, Purusha Suktam and Sri Rudram, all they are there in the Bhagavatam also. So there where it is mentioned that they glorified Mahalakshmi by Sri Suktam. And after that, what do you find in the Bhagavatam? That Mahalakshmi decided that to marry somebody, and eventually she decided to marry the Supreme Lord himself, so that she will not have to any time feel wrong about what she has done. And she was right in what she did, because she never repented for what she has done by marrying the Supreme Lord herself. So later on, this incident happened. And Sridharacharya Swamiji, while commenting on the Srimad Bhagavatam, that he has used this churning the milk ocean to an example of studying Srimad Bhagavatam. That is also very interesting. Why it's interesting is because often we try to understand Srimad Bhagavatam by our effort, and sometimes we don't understand anything from Bhagavatam. And then we start thinking, what's going wrong somewhere? Now, what does Sridharacharya Swamiji says about it? Sridharacharya Swamiji's commentary, if you read on the Bhagavatam, he will say, he says there, Koham Mandamadi, where am I, this dull-headed person? Acharya Swamiji is saying this. Koham Mandamadi, Kvedam Mandana Kshiravarithe. That where is the question of churning the milk ocean, he says. Kim Tatra Paramanurvai, Yatraman Jadi Mandharam. That what happened was, during the churning of the milk ocean, the demigods and the demons, with great effort to try to bring the Mandara mountains from Ilavrata Varsham to the milk ocean. They couldn't do that. Eventually, Krishna himself took the responsibility, carried it on top of the Garuda and brought it there for churning the ocean. And that Mandara mountain, when they started churning, it went down in the milk. In the ocean, it went down. It didn't come up. So, Sridharacharya Swamiji says in the Bhagavatam that Kvaham Mandhamadi Kvedam Mandhana Kshiravarihe. Where is the question of churning this ocean called Srimad Bhagavatam? He is comparing that. Churning the milk ocean, he is comparing to churning Srimad Bhagavatam. Why? Kim Tatra Paramanu Vai. I am a Paramanu. Paramanu means the tiniest thing in this world. That is my position in relationship with Srimad Bhagavatam. Yatra Majjadi Mandaraha. Mandara mountains have gone in the water, gone in the ocean, in the milk. And only by Krishna's grace that it came back again. But because Krishna had to accept the form as the tortoise and had to lift the whole thing back up again. Otherwise it wouldn't have happened. So only by Krishna's, this, what does he mean to say by this? Sridharacharya Swamiji, by his great commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, known as Bhavartha Divika or Sridhariyam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted this as the only valid commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam from the very beginning. Mahaprabhu said to everybody else that this is the commentary. I would like everybody, and he also read this commentary all the time. This is the history of Sridhariyam. Sridhariyam means the book which Sridharajarya Swamiji has written, famously known as Sridhariyam. Though Sridhariyam has, the author of Sridhariyam is writing like this. If he is finding it difficult to understand Bhagavatam, what's our position? That is why we have to always remember this. Kvaham mandamadi kvedam mandhana kshiravaride kim tatra paramanurvai yatra manjadi mandaraham. That Mandara mountains has gone down in there. So what will happen to me like a paramanu, a tiniest particle in this world, where will I get in Srimad Bhagavatam? This is how much careful and how much concerned they are before they start trying to understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavadakhyoyam pratyaksha krishna mevahi. If you understand Srimad Bhagavatam, you understand Krishna, because Bhagavatam is Krishna. So this is how it is. So anyway, Sridharajarya Swamiji comments about this in the Bhagavatam like this. Every word, every letter in the Srimad Bhagavatam has so much involved in that, to understand that it may take lifetimes, to even many lifetimes, it may not be possible to understand. And that is the conclusion of all the great devotees. So anyway, here, what has happened now is that our Maharishmi came out, and Maharishmi was married. Maharishmi decided to marry the Supreme Lord, and Krishna also, in response to that, gave her a presence in his chest permanently. Was given, in other words, Maharishmi like Aswam in the neck. Maharishmi has got a permanent place in Krishna's chest. So that is where she was offered a place. And then in the process of churning, so many other things also happened. That when the nectar came out, when the nectar came out, who came out from there? Dhanundari came out. Dhanundari came with the pot of nectar in the hand. And that pot of nectar, when he carried and came out, that all the devotees who were there, the demigods, they wanted the nectar. The demons also wanted the nectar. So they were both fighting. And unfortunately, in the process, the nectar was taken away by the demons. Dhanundri handed over the pot to them, and they took it and left. And you can imagine how the demigods would have felt. They have gone through so much effort, and they have spent so much energy in churning this ocean. And in their helpless condition, they have done everything they can to assist Krishna. And they were hoping that they will have the nectar and they will get back their youth and their strength. But now that it has been stolen away, the demigods didn't know what to do. So they have started requesting Krishna at that point, that how are you going to help us? What are we supposed to do? Krishna asked them one question. Who helped you so far? What was your doubt about this? That you couldn't do anything so far anyway. So now you're worried about the nectar. Who was helping you all this? And that is the only way that this chaining will going to succeed. And that is what Krishna spoke to them. Krishna told them that so far you have taken my shelter. And if I could help you to get the nectar out of the ocean, do you think it is difficult for me to get the nectar for you? This was Krishna's answer to that. So in this whole episode of the Kshirabdhi Madanam, or the churning of this milk ocean, there is a great message also, that Vedavyasa has not forgotten to mention that. In the Bhagavatam, it is very much explicitly clear also. The message is that both the demons and the demigods, they were both working very hard to get this nectar from the ocean. So, but although the nectar came into the hands of the demons did not have the opportunity to have it. That was denied to them. On the other hand, the nectar went back to the hands of the demigods. So in other words, in this material world, no matter how much one endeavors hard and put all their effort and energy to make something successful, at the end, It is not us who makes that decision, who should have the result. The result is decided by Krishna's decision. Krishna decides that Bharadharava, in other words, he has the, Krishna is the person who decides whether you should get the result of your action or not. Therefore, it also makes it important that a living entity who is engaged in activities in this material world, unless he offers the results of his activities to Krishna, he should not expect any success in his dealings in this world. That is where the real success is. Karmarpanam. Krishna talks about sarva dharman parityajya mamegam sharanam raja. That Krishna's words are such that unless one offers the results of one's own activities to Krishna, he is not qualified to have the result of his own activity. That is offered by Krishna. Bharadhadava. That is how in the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita Krishna is referred to. That the personality who decides who should have the result. So in this case, the demigods were qualified to have the result. And that is why they got the result also. How did they get that? When the nectar came out from Dhanendri Devi, it was taken over by the demons and they ran away from there. When they ran away, Krishna decided immediately that now is the time to bring the demons back into Maya again. Because this energy called Maya is always under Krishna's control. Sri Shukan says in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the second canto, in the first chapter, Krishna Sri Shukan says to Parikshit, when Krishna is smiling, what does that mean? Hasonmadakari janinja maya. When Krishna's smile is always considered to be Maya. That when she is smiling, you should take it. Maya is there, right there to assist Krishna in all his activities. That Apashyal Purusham Purvam Mayam Ja Tadupashrayam. In the first canto, you can see that Samyak Pranihido Mali Apashyal Purusham Purvam Mayam Ja Tadupashrayam. So Maya Devi is waiting there to offer this help to Krishna. So here also exactly the same thing has happened. That when the Kalaguda Visham or the poison which came out from the ocean, or the, what is known as Kalahalam came out, and Lord Shiva decided to accept that in the hand. And before Lord Shiva accepted that, who went there to see Lord Shiva? Sri Parvati was there. What did Sri Parvati say? Bhavanya panyamo dadam. Bhavani Devi, Sri Parvati congratulated Lord Shiva in taking that poison. Bhavanya panyamo dadam. That simply she has accepted him. And some commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam says that Sri Parvati's greatness, why it is so important is that she is controlling, that she is personified form of the material energy. And when she is present there, she was 100% clear in her mind that when I am standing here, nothing can happen to Lord Shiva. This was her mood. In the Saundarya Lahari, it mentions like this. Maram varshiyam sam mayana virasam marma sujadam tavapange loge. That once it so happened that in from a very, very famous temple, there was a festival going on there. It was the temple of Sri Parvati. Sri Parvati is one of the famous temples. And when this festival was going on, as usual, there is a procession during the festival, taking the deity out on a procession with all the devotees, everybody going from the temple to a distant place. So they were taking a procession, this deity was taken in a procession outside. So at that time, when the procession was moving in the street, there were so many people standing on the roadside watching the Sri Parvati coming out from the temple on this procession. So they were offering their respects to her, making different offerings to her and paying their respects to her. And Sri Parvati was seeing everybody on either side. That is that Jagadambika, the mother of the universe, she was giving a glance at everybody who was standing on either side of the street. So when she was looking like this, among the crowd, there was an old person. Old person means extremely old. So old he was. And to describe him, this is how it is described. Maram varshiyam sam. Mara means the old thing goes white. That's what it is. Naram Varshiyamsam, that that he has become so old, there is not one single hair which has not gone gray. So in other words, he was so old in every aspect. Narmasujadam, this is another interesting thing. To describe that old man, this is how he is described, this old devotee of Sri Parvati. He was standing there and he couldn't see anything properly because his eyesight is completely more or less gone. He is just managing with a very bare minimum. No glasses, nothing can help him. It was in such a difficult situation. Naram Varshiyamsam Nayanavirasam, the eyes have more or less finished his job. It's over. Now, what more, what do you say about this? Narmasujadam. Narmasujadam means that normally, if you joke something to somebody, the person who is listening to the joke, he should immediately understand that. Otherwise, it has no meaning. Sometimes there are some people, they will hear some joke, they won't understand it. And then after 4 or 5 hours, they will get it. Oh, what is it? And then they'll start laughing suddenly. And people think, why is he laughing? Or if you ask him, why are you laughing? He says, oh, I was just thinking about the joke he made the other day. Because only got it now, after so many days. So that's no good. If you joke with something, somebody, immediately you should catch it. Otherwise, the joke doesn't work. It doesn't have any effect. It's not having the right spirit then. So this is what happens to our old person also. This old man, he has come to that stage. Anything you joke with him, he will say, I can't hear anything. Both eyes, ears, he will start pulling up like this. So virtually everybody has given up on him because he has gone so old. This was his unfortunate condition. All three things are there in him. Then what happened? What it so happened that Sri Bhavari, while she was going, she suddenly looked and somehow he fell, the glance fell on him. Just she saw him, that's all. She just, her vision fell on him. When that happened, immediately that person's whole constitution changed, whole body changed. He became so youthful and such a youthful personality that what does it say? Naramvarshiyamsam nayanavirasam narmasujadam tadapanga loge tavadamanudavandi shadasham. That hundreds and hundreds of young women from the heavenly planets, they started running after him, seeing his youthful body. So this is, if one glance of Sri Parvati can make this happen, where is the question of Lord Shiva having any difficulty when she was standing there? And that is exactly the reason. Bhavanya pyanyamodada. Srimad Bhagavatam, this is specifically mentions there, Sri Parvati's potency. It is to this Sri Parvati, gopis pray to her. Kartyayini mahamaye, mahayogini adhishwari, nanda gopasudam devi, padimme kurude naman. That why they pray to her. That Kartyayini, Mahamaye, Mahayogini, Adhishwari, please help us so that Krishna will come as our husband. So like this you can see, Sri Parvati's glories are in the Srimad Bhagavatam at different instances mentioned. So this Sri Parvati was there standing, and where is the question of Lord Shiva getting affected by Talagodam or Halahalam? Nothing will happen. So here, when the nectar came out from from the churning, the nectar was the demons have stolen. So Krishna decided now that I have to do something about it, and that is how he took up this form. Now if you see how Krishna has changed his form, that if you see Krishna's ornaments, most of them are feminine. I don't know whether you have noticed that. Magaram and Kundalam, the two ear rings, what Krishna wears is also very much feminine. Kaustubam, the jewel in the neck, also a feminine ornament. All the bangles in the hand, Krishna has. Anglets on the hand, Krishna has. Everything is more or less feminine. So basically, Krishna doesn't require to change from one form to another. It's not so difficult for Krishna. All Krishna has done was, standing there, took out that peacock feather from the head. And there is so much hair at the back. Krishna nicely arranged it in such a way that when you look at it, You immediately think it is such a beautiful person standing there. So Krishna arranged all that. Then Krishna thought that I have to change my dress. No, there was no need to change. The Pidambaram, yellow clothing, he pulled it out and covered himself with that. All that's what he did. And only one thing Krishna did. Krishna thought that I'm just a woman now, I'm a lady. As soon as Krishna thought like that, the Sangalpam or the concept was enough that Krishna has changed the form into Mohini form. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you see Krishna's position, who understands? Nobody understands. Why? Gajendra says in the prayers, you can see there in one of the verses, Gajendra says, Na stri, na puman, na jandu, na shandaha. He is neither man, he is neither woman, he is not an animal, because he accepted so many forms. Malsyam, Kurmam, Varaham, Nrasimham, all these different animals' forms he has accepted. He is not, doesn't belong to that. And na stri, he is not a feminine form either. Na puman, na shandaha. None of these will work on Krishna. Krishna is the absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead. He is beyond our understanding. What is Krishna? Nobody understands who is Krishna. Govindam adivurusham tamaham bhajami. That's all Brahma Samhita says about Krishna. That, so similarly, here you can see that when Krishna wanted to change the form of into the Mohini's form, it didn't take very long. It was all done like this in a second. And why did Krishna change that form? There is also another reason behind it. When Maharashtri married the Supreme Lord, there was apparently everyone felt very, very, very concerned that, oh, she didn't marry me. This was the concern. Many of them, particularly few personalities, Indra felt very much. Mahabali also felt. Because they are the two leaders, so the demigods and the demons. So naturally they were thinking, if she marries anybody, it will be me. This is what Mahabali was thinking. And Indra was also thinking. But Maharashtri, being so intelligent and being very clear in her mind what she is doing, that didn't make any mistake. That is how the commentators say, Mahabali didn't make any mistake in what she did. So this Maharashtri didn't make any mistake. So Maharashtri has decided to marry the Supreme Lord. But what happened to Maharashtri was, after the marriage, Maharashtri started thinking that I am the most beautiful person. There's nobody more beautiful than me. This thought started building up in Maharashtri's mind. So Krishna thought at that moment, if Maharashtri is thinking like that, she hasn't seen me in the female form, as a lady. So let her see me now in that form. So when the Mohini form came out from Krishna, apparently Maharashtri pulled her head down. She couldn't look at her. Because she started looking at her own, that how unattractive she was compared to Mohini. This is what the conclusion of Mahalakshmi was at that point. So also it is said that to remove Mahalakshmi's pride, Krishna took this Mohini form. This is what Bhagavan says. So then anyway, when that form was taken, when the form was taken, Mohini Murti decided that this is the time now to deal with the demons. So naturally she knew the demons' weaknesses, everything, in every aspect. No one knew more better than what Mohini Murti knew about the demons. So as soon as they saw her, immediately Mahabali and all the demons there, present there, they started thinking, it's not a bad thing if we can get her now. Even if we don't get this nectar, let the nectar go, but if we can get her, that will be the best thing. And these thoughts started churning their mind very strongly. And in the Bhagavatam, how Krishna's Maya works in this world, why in the Bhagavatam nobody understands this Maya. Maya is completely under Krishna's control. And that Maya can put anybody, even personalities, including Lord Shiva, has fallen into that. What to talk about ordinary conditioned living entities like us. And we are sometimes thinking we are not in Maya. So that is the most interesting thing. So I said before, in one instance, somebody said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I was in Maya for some time. Prabhupada said to him, When were you out of it? This was the question he had to ask. Because seeing our immaturity, our lack of understanding of Krishna's Maya, and we are thinking that, oh, now I am out of Maya, I am safe now. No, no time we are safe. And that is what is proved there. That Mahabali, when Krishna wanted to bring the demons under Maya, it didn't take very long. It took only a few minutes. And at that time, the demons' mind started changing. They started thinking about her, attracted by the bodily features of Mohini Murti. So at that time, they approached her straight away, directly as they approached her, and told her, could you serve this nectar to us? Can you do that for us? And they were requesting her. They expected that she will oblige. Mohini Murti said, I have nothing to do with the nectar. You can keep it with you. First of all, I have no experience in serving this. I never cooked, I never served anything to anybody. I'm not used to any of these kitchen services. Never I did that before. Mohini Murti said to the demons. So demon said, oh, that doesn't matter. We can still have, you can do whatever you can. He said. But the way Mohini Murti has turned these demons to surrender to her, this is what is the most interesting thing in the Bhagavatam. How she was step by step breaking them to agree with her in everything and ultimately still asking her to do the service to her. So when she said to them that I couldn't do it, I have no experience, I've never done that, Mahabali said, told Mohini Murti that doesn't matter. You can serve us still. We are willing to accept whatever way you want us to do it. We'll still agree with that. We'll listen to you and we'll do anything. Mohini Murti said, no, I'm not interested. She said, but you know something else, she said, that by nature, I am a Pumshchali and Swairini. It says in the Bhagavatam like that. That by nature, I am a very uncertain person. I keep changing my mind all the time. And intelligent people say that you should not trust a woman who has got a flickering nature in the mind and who is not very steady. Not that everybody is included in that. Forgive me, don't misunderstand that. It's only referring to Mohini Murti says about her at that time. By nature, I am like this, that I change my mind and intelligent people don't put their trust on me. That is how she put it to them. And it also says, she says there, that if you, tomorrow, if I serve and it is not pleasing to you, you will start coming to me arguing about it. Oh, you didn't do this properly, you didn't do that. I don't want all these kind of arguments. Leave me alone. You take your nectar and you go wherever you like. I'll do what I like, she said. They won't give up. Maya was working from inside. From inside, Maya was prompting them. No, leave the nectar. Get her. This is more important. So at that point, Mahabali came forward, the leader of the demons. And he started telling her, let us do it this way. We'll bathe in the morning. Mangala Snanam mentions in the Bhagavatam. And after that, you tell us how you want to serve the nectar. We will listen to that. We'll agree with that. So, the nectar pot, saying this, Mahabali handed over the pot to Mohini Murti. When Mohini Murti got the nectar, she said to them that after you bathe yourself and once you are ready to take it, come and sit here now in a line. I will serve you the nectar first. She told all the demons to sit in one line, and she told all the demigods to sit on me another line, on the opposite side, facing each other. And she had this nectar pot. And then both the demigods and the demons were looking at her. And she had this nectar pot in her. Now that is where you have to see Krishna's real form. When she took this Mohini form, Krishna decided that after who did all the work so far? It's me who has done it. 500 hands on either side, bringing the Mandara mountains and churning all this. Who did that? None of these people have done it. They have only helped me. It is actually me who have done it. So I should have the result also, not them. First let me have it. She took the pot and both of them were looking at her and she poured it into her mouth. Very happily she took it. Because she has done this, in the 1,000 names of Vishnu, Krishna got a name. What does that mean? Somabaha, Amrudabhayaha,
Amrutavaya, first person who has done it himself. Therefore, Krishna got that name in the thousand names as Amrutapayaha, and also another name, Agribhuk. Agribhuk means one who takes it first before everybody else. That is how Krishna got these names. Every name in thousand names of Vishnu has come from these different pastimes of Krishna at different times. So this chaining of milk ocean brought these names to Krishna. Somabhaha, Amrutapayaha, Agribhuk, all these comes from this pastime of Krishna. So when all these things happened, then Krishna took the nectar and stood there. Nobody said one word that why you are taking, not giving us anything. It was all done for the sake of the demigods, and they are just sitting there looking at it. And the demons, they were thinking that we have snatched the pot, now we didn't get anything, and she is happily taking everything. So that time, Mohini Murthy said to them, that the next thing what you have to do is this, that you have decided to trust me, isn't it? They said. Mahabali started thinking, what's going to happen now? So Mohini Murthy said to them, close your eyes now. Keep your eyes closed and stay there. And saying before that, she started walking between the demons and the demigods. Once one end and from the other end back this way again. So in between the two, she walked up and down twice. And when she did that, it was all done with an intention that the demons were looking at her beauty and thinking that why bother about this nectar? If she can come with us, what more do we want? This was the demonic nature working in the head at that time. And Mahabali told all the demons to be peaceful, went up to her and made a request to Mohini Murthy, said to her, you can do whatever you like with that nectar, but if you like to accept any one of us, looking at you, we think that you are not married. We don't know who your father is, what your background is, but still we think you are coming from a very noble background. And if you like to accept any one of us as your husband, we have no objection to that. In fact, Mahabali apparently was thinking that if she marries anyone, it will be me, because I am the head of this group here. Who else she will marry? So thinking that, Mahabali was very happily putting this proposal, very excellent proposal to Mohini Murthy. Mohini said to Mahabali, no, I have decided to serve this nectar now. You don't talk to me anything now, I'm going to serve the nectar. Apparently Mahabali could not say anything. Why? Why Mahabali could not say anything? Because earlier she has said, no, I don't want to serve. And it's only because the demons have insisted that Mohini Murthy has agreed to serve. Now, if I start arguing, he was worried. Bhagavatam Sri Shukam says, Stri Vivada Jugupsayam, that if I start getting into argument with a woman, I'll be finished. And that is true today also. You don't get arguing with them anytime, at any conditions. Stri Vivada Jugupsayam, that if I argue, I will be the loser. So instead of losing this argument, it was decided, Mahabali just stayed there without saying one word to Mohini Murthy. Mohini walked up and down two times, and that was enough for Maya to work. Maya has completely taken over the demons, and they sat there. Happily, Mohini Murthy served. When the demons were closed their eyes, she served the nectar to all the demigods there, and they happily ate it. But in between, something else happened. When the nectar was being served, not all the demons were after Mohini. One of them thought, called Sorbhanu. Sorbhanu thought, what is this Mohini, this, that and the other? This is the right opportunity to get some nectar. Why should I leave this opportunity? So what did he do? He ran from one side to the other side. And he went and sat in between two personalities there, between the sun god and the moon god. They were sitting there, Surya and the Soma. They were sitting there. In between, he managed to creep in. Sometimes, you know, when you serve prasadam here, have you seen? Our Peter Prabhu tries very hard to get a queue properly done. But our great personalities on this temple sometimes find it difficult to go to the end of the queue. So they will decide that, so I say they can just creep in. Sorbhanu did exactly the same thing. Nothing much different. So when Sorbhanu crept in, what happened? That nobody noticed that.
Here also nobody noticed. Some people noticed, but what can you do? They just tolerate it. So they did the same thing. And Sorbanu went inside. But you will find out some things when the true form comes out from the person. That the nectar was served. Normally, when the demigods and all, when they eat, they just don't eat like this as soon as it comes in. Like some of us do. That some people, after a time, they find it difficult to say the prayers. We are supposed to say, Sharira, Vidyajal, Jirendriya, Tahegal, and eventually the whole prayer, and also Mahaprasade, Govinde, Nama Brahmani, Vaishnavi, all the prayers we have to say. After that, we have to chant the Mahamantra, and then we should eat. This is how we were instructed by Srila Prabhupada. But over a period of time, these things have become less important. Sometimes somebody does it, but as a group to sing and to follow has become now less important. That will happen always, that these kind of things do happen. We become so busy in our life that we have no time even to chant the prayers before taking Krishna's prasadam. We become so busy. So anyway, this thing happened that this was an opportunity that all the demigods were reciting their prayers, but our Sorbanu thought had no prayers to say. So what did he do? He started taking and eating it straight away. So somebody noticed that on either side, both the sun and the moon, this Shashi and Surya, both of them see that. Immediately when they saw, they recognized him. They said, this person is not from one among us, because we don't do like this. When we have some prasadam to eat or anything, normally it takes, Brahmanas have their own ways, or demigods also, their own way of eating. They take their time to start eating prasadam. So here, what has happened was, Sorbanu started eating, and that was the time, as soon as Mohini Murthy served the nectar onto the leaf, immediately Sorbanu ate that. And both sun and the moon noticed that and reported the matter to Mohini Murthy. Mohini could not wait anymore. Took her, the spoon with which she was serving that, and gave a good smack on the neck. So it became Sudarshana Chakram at that moment. It became the disc at that moment. And it cut him into two pieces. And that is the two things, what we know today as the Rahu and the Ketu. The Rahu and Ketu planets came from that. And these two planets, Krishna, after cutting them into two pieces, Krishna felt a little bit compassion for them. So what did he do? Because he felt compassion, he said to them that in certain positions, you become two planets. But in certain positions, if you stand, if you happen to be in certain positions, they can do an immensely good for the person on whom it has the effect or impact. Like all the planets have their own different houses. And in the astrology, these different houses has a significance. Then in certain houses, different houses are there, and certain houses, Rahu along with certain other planets, if they occupy that house, they can do immense good to the person involved. So that is how that incident happened. And immediately after that, the demigods took the nectar. And by now, the demons were still listening to the sound coming from the anklets. But after some time, they couldn't hear anything. So they started feeling that has anything happened now. By then, the nectar has been consumed by the demigods. And not only they have consumed, Mohini Murthy has handed over the pot to Indra, and she left the scene, went away. It is only then Mahabali opened his eyes and saw what has happened. And Mahabali realized that they have been cheated. And it is that Vishnu who has done this again, they said to each other. And immediately there was so much anger in the minds of the demons that they decided to fight the demigods straight away. And there was a major war between the demons and the demigods, and in that war, demons lost totally. Most of the demons were killed in the war, including Mahabali. Including Mahabali was killed in the war, and demigods succeeded completely, and they went back to the heavenly planets, and that is how Krishna retrieved the heavenly planets for them and all the demigods in the heavenly planets got back their previous position again. And what is more interesting here to notice is that Mahabali, although lost the war, you have to remember this, Mahabali, although lost the war, never got unhappy about it. Mahabali's approach was, in the war, only one side will win. Only one side can win in the war. Both sides won't win. So Mahabali's statement is, only one side can win the war. I can also go back. And by my effort, if I can get the strength back, I can defeat the demons later on, demigods later. And taking this decision, Mahabali left. How did Mahabali get back to life? That is also important. That when all of them got killed, including Mahabali, in the war, the priest of the demons, who is Shukracharya, came up to Sri Narada Muni and told Sri Narada Muni, my dear sage, now what am I supposed to do? I lost my job. Because till now, I have been made redundant now. Because till I had my service here with the demons. I was their priest. And now they're all dead and gone. What am I supposed to do? And I was thinking that maybe, can I start assisting you? Is there any service for me? He said to Sri Narada Muni. Narada Muni told Shukracharya that, Shukracharya, what are you talking about? Don't you know that special medicine called Mrita Sanjeevani? Mrita Sanjeevani is that medicine by which you can bring a dead person back to life again. That is a big story in the Mahabharata also, how Mrita Sanjeevani was taken away by the demigods from the demons later. That's all there. But this incident, what happened was that Shukracharya was reminded by Sri Narada Muni to use Mrita Sanjeevani and to bring all the demons back to life again. And that is how Shukracharya brought Mahabali and Virochana, and there are so many lists mentioned, names mentioned there. All these great demons were brought back to life again. Mahabali never once repented for losing the war. He thought, if I go back and if I do the right things, I can also get strength and come back and win this war. And that is what has happened later on in the 8th canto. So this is how that story goes on. That in these 8 chapters of the churning the milk ocean in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedavyasa Maharshi has given a graphic description of the activities of the demons and the demigods. And you find here that how this particular interesting episode of the churning the milk ocean has given, what did Krishna gain from that? Krishna called these different names by this specific sporting activity of Krishna. So I will read a couple of chapters and then we can discuss it after that. Canto, chapter 6. Shri Shuka Uvacham Evam Stuta Suragane Bhagavan Hari Ishwara Teshama Virabudrajan Sahasrar Kodayadjudi Tenaiva Mahasa Sarve Deva Pratihade Kshana Nabashen Khambishakshonim Atmanam Jakuto Vihum Virinjo Bhagavan Dushva Sahasarve Nathamdanim Swachvam Maravaka Shyamam Kunjagarbha Arunekshanam Tapta Hema Avadadena Lesal Kausheya Vasasa Prasanna Acharu Savangim Sumuhim Sundarabruvam Mahamanigiridena Kayurabhyam Jabushidam Karna Abhanamur Bhada Kapola Shri Mukhambujam Kanji Kalabavalaya Hara Nubana Shobhidam Kaustu Bhavaranam Lakshmim Vibradim Vanamalinim Sudarshanadi Viswastre Murti Madhuvasidam Pushtavadeva Pravara Sasharva Purushambaram Sarvamaragane Sagam Sarvange Avanin Gadei Brahmovajam Ajada Janmastri Samyamayam Gunayam Urvana Sukharnavaya Anoranime Pariganyadhamne Mahanubhavaya Namo Namaste Namo Samaste
യൂപന്തമൈതൽ പുരുഷർഷബീജം ശ്രേയോത്തിമീർ വൈദികതാന്ത്രികേണ യോഗേന ധാത സഹന സ്ത്രീലോകാൻ പശ്യാമ്യമുഷ്മിൻ നഹ വിശ്വമൂർത്തവും മനസാമനീഷിണോ ഗുണവ്യവാഗുണം വിവശ്ചിതാ യഥാഗ്നിമേധസ്യ മൃതം ജഗോഷു ഭൂവ്യന്നം അമ്പുദ്ധ്യമനേ ച വൃത്യം ദമനേ ച വൃത്യം യോഗേർ മനുഷ്യാം അധിയന്തി ഹി ത്വാം ഗുണേഷു ബുദ്ധ്യാ കവയോ വദന്തി തം ത്വാം വയം നാനസമുജ്ജിഹാനം സരോജനാ ഭാവിചിരേപ്സിതാർത്ഥം ദൃഷ്ട്വാ ഗദാ നൃപതി മധ്യ സർവേ ഗദാദ വാർത്താമിവ ഗാംഗമം ഭാഹ സത്വം വിദൽസാഖില ലോകമാനം വയം യഥർത്ഥാ സ്തവപാദമൂലം സമാഗതാസ്തേ ബഹിരന്തരാത്മൻ കിം വാന്യ വിജ്ഞാപ്യമശേഷ സാക്ഷിണാഹ അഹം ഗിരിത്രശ്ച സുരാദയോ യേ ദക്ഷാദയോഗ്നേവഗേതമസ്തേ കിം വാ വിദാമേഷ പൃഥഗ്ഭിപാദ വിദൽസ്വ ശംനോ ദ്വിജദേവ മന്ത്രം ശ്രീശുഗവാച ഏവം വിരിഞ്ചാരി വിരീടിതസ്തദ് വിജ്ഞായദേഷാം ഹൃദയം തഥൈവ ജഗാദ ജീമോദക വീരയാഗിര ബദ്ധാഞ്ജലിൻ സംവൃത സർവകാരകാൻ ഏകമേവേശ്വരസ്തസ്മിൻ സുരകാര്യേ സുരേശ്വര വിഹൃതുകാമസ്ഥാനാഹ സമുദ്രോന്മഥനാദിവി ശ്രീ ഭഗവാനുവാചാം ഹന്ത ബ്രഹ്മൻ മഹോശംഭോ ധേ ദേവ മമ ഭാഷിതം ശൃണുതാ മഹിതാ സർവേ ശ്രേയോ വസ്യാദ്യതാ സുരാഹ യാതദാനവദൈതേയസ്താവൽ സന്ധിർവിധീയതാം കാലേ അനുഗ്രഹീതൈ സൈര്യാവദ്വോഭവമാത്മനാം അരയോ ഭി സന്ധേയാ സതി കാര്യാർത്ഥഗൗരവേ അഹിമൂഷകവദ്ദേവാ ഹർത്തസ്യ പദവീം ഗതൈ അമൃതോത്പാദനേ യത്ന ക്രിയതാം അവിളംബിതം യസ്യ വീരസ്യ വൈ ജന്മ മൃത്യുഗ്രസ്തോമരോ ഭവേൽ ക്ഷിത്വാ ക്ഷീരോദതൌ സർവ വീരുത്രിണൌഷധി മന്ദാനം മന്ദനം കൃത്വാ നേത്രം കൃത്വാ ദ വാസുകിം സഹായേന മയാ ദേവ നിർബന്ധം ധ്വമന്ത്രിത ധമതന്ത്രിത ക്ലേശഭാജോ ഭവിഷ്യന്തി ദൈത്യായൂയം ഫലഗ്രഹാ യൂയം നദനുമോധത്വം യതിച്ഛന്തി സുരാസുരാഹ ന സംരംഭേണ സിദ്ധ്യന്തി സർവേർത്ഥാ സാന്ത്വയാ യഥാ ന ഭേദവ്യം കാളകൂടാ വിഷാചരണി സംഭവാൽ ലോഭകാര്യോ നവോജാ ദൂരോഷ കാമസ്തു വസ്തുഷു ശ്രീശുക ഉവാച ഇതി ദേവാൻ സമാവിശ്യ ഭഗവാൻ പുരുഷോത്തമ തേഷാമന്തർതേ രാജൻ സ്വച്ഛന്ദ ഗിരീശ്വര അതതസ്മൈ ഭഗവതേ നമസ്കൃത്യ വിദാമഹ ഭവശ്യ ജഗ്മത് സ്വം സ്വം ദാമോബേയുർബലിം സുരാഹ ദൃഷ്ട്വാരീരത്നസംയത്നാഞ്ജാലക്ഷോഭാൻ സ്വനായകാൻ നേഷദ്ദൈത്യരാൾ ശ്ലോക്യം സന്ധി വിഗ്രഹകാലവൽ തേ വൈരോജനിവാസീനം ഗുപ്തം ചാസുരയൂധവൈ ശ്രീയാപണമയാ ദൃഷ്ടം ഇദാശേഷമുപാഗമൻ മഹേന്ദ്ര ശ്രഷ്ണയാ വാചാ സാന്ത്വയി ത്വാ മഹാമതി അഭ്യഭാഷതൽ സർവം ശിക്ഷിതം പുരുഷോത്തമാൽ തദരോചന ദൈത്യസ്യമത്രാന്യേ സുരാധിവ ശംബരോ അരിഷ്ടനേമിശ്ച ഏകത്രിപുരവാസിന തദോ ദേവസുരാ കൃത്വാ സംവിധം ഹൃതസൗഹൃദ ഉദ്യമം പരമം ചക്രു അമൃതാർത്ഥേ പരന്തമാം തതസ്തേ മന്ദ്രഗിരി ഓജസാൽപാധി ദുർമദാം നദന്നൗധതിം നിന്യു ശക്ത പരിഘവാഹവ ദൂരഭാരോദ്വഹശ്രാന്ത ശക്രവൈരോചനാദയ അപാരയന്തസ്ത്രം മൂടും ഇവശാ വിജഹുപതി നിപതൻ സഗിരിസ്തത്ര ബഹൂനമലദാനവാൻ ചൂർണയാ വാസമഹത ഭാരേണ കനകാചലാം താം സദാമഗ്നമനസോ ഭഗ്നബാരൂക കന്ധരാൻ വിജ്ഞായാം ഭഗവാം സത്ര ബഭൂവ ഗരുഡധ്വജ ഗിരിവാദ വിനിഷ്പിഷ്ടാ വിലോക്യാമരത അമരദാനവാൻ ഈക്ഷയാ ജീവയാമാസ നിർജരാ നിർഗുണാന്യഥാ ഗിരിം ചാരോപ്യ ഗരുണേ ഹസ്തേനൈകേന ലീലയാ ആരുഹ്യ പ്രയയാവബ്ധ്യം സുരാസുരഗണൈർവൃത അവരോപ്യ ഗിരിം സ്കന്ധാൽ സുവർണവദതാം വര യയോ ജലന്തമുത്സൃജ്യ ഹരിണാ സമിവർജിത ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതീ മഹാപുരാണി പരമഹംസം സംഹിതായാം അഷ്ടമസ്കന്ദേ അമൃതവധനി മന്ദരാചലാനയനം നാമ ഷഷ്ടോധ്യായ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദം. സോ ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് ദി സ്റ്റോറി ഓഫ് ദി ചേർണിംഗ് ദ മിൽക്ക് ഓഷൻ. സോ ഇഫ് ദേർസ് എനി ക്വസ്റ്റ്യൻസ് ഓർ കമന്റ്സ്.
Churning the milk ocean, yeah? I'm quite surprised that if it's churning the milk ocean, both the demons and the demigods must have left their residence to actually go to the place where Lord Vishnu resides to actually churn the milk.
Yes, this is different than that milk ocean. Yeah, the milk ocean where Mahavishnu lie down is a different place.
So where is this
milk ocean? This is this is the milk ocean which was created when Priyavrata's chariot drove around. You remember that?
Yes.
In the fifth canto, Priyavrata's chariot was moving around. And what did he do? Sapta Dvipam and Sapta Samudrams were created. The seven seas and the seven islands. Jambu, Plaksham, Shalmi, Kusham, Kraunjam, Pushkaram. The seven islands were created. And there were seven seas which were separating them one to another. And there is a milk ocean in one of them. That is a milk ocean they were chanting. It is not a milk ocean where Mahavishnu lie down. That's a different milk ocean altogether.
Okay, but it's, so the where is this place?
I wish I could show you on the map. In the Bhagavatam, if you look into the history of the fifth canto, you have to read fifth canto very carefully. You will notice there that in the process of Brahma's creation, Priyavrata was there as a king. You remember Priyavrata? So Swayambhumanu has two sons, Priyavrata and Uttanapada. Akuti, Devahuti and Prasuti, three daughters and two sons. Uttanapada became the king first and then came Priyavrata. Although it should have been the other way. Priyavrata should have been first, but due to certain reasons it's mentioned there. So when Priyavrata became king, Priyavrata became so powerful that one day he decided to take a chariot and drive around. And now the earth planet, what we live and what we see today, is not the whole earth planet, according to Srimad Bhagavatam. What is known as in the Bhugola Varnana, there is a description of that. In there, what we are seeing here is only a small part of Jambudvipam. Jambudvipam, this earth planet is a part of Jambudvipam. So what we see is one part of Jambudvipam, but there are other islands which are surrounding Jambudvipam. Jambudvipam is right in the middle. Surrounding Jambudvipam is Plaksham, then Shalmani, Kusham, Kraunjam, Pushkaram. Like that, one after the other, different islands came. How did this island come about? Because with this chariot, he drove around and he created these different islands. Wherever the chariot went through, they became oceans. And first ocean, starting from with the salt water, and then later on goes into the sugarcane juice, and then later on the different things like yogurt and milk and clean water, clear water, everything comes one after the other, separating the different islands. And it is in that milk ocean all these things have happened.
Okay, this is still a bit confusing.
I know.
You described the Swarup Bhanu between the sun and the ocean, I mean the moon and the sun.
Yes.
Where I get confused is that Krishna would have known about that. It didn't have to be before he even drank the nectar. So, but that's always puzzled my mind. How can he actually have drunk it, and then for the demigods to inform Mohini that he's not one of those, and then he chops his head off.
Yes.
He should have known about
Krishna
it.
Felt compassion for them, because Krishna thought among the demons he is a demigod. Among the demons, why? Because at least he was not running after her. So Krishna recognized that and said that desiring to have nectar was not considered terribly bad. That was not something which Krishna had a great objection. But in this particular incident, what brings out is that the demon's mentality is always to they have no regulative principles. In other words, what suits them, that's what they will do. So in this particular instance also, they were chasing Mohini themselves, and they were willing to give up the nectar. But this Surbhanu had one good quality. He was not after Mohini. He wanted nectar. In other words, his activity was a little bit more cultured than the demon's activities were. So Krishna had no objection him having some nectar. So he allowed them to have that. In fact, he was aware of everything, what was going on. What was going to happen in the future, also Krishna knew about it. So there's nothing that Krishna didn't know about it. So whatever Krishna has allowed has happened there. That's all. Nothing more than that. Everything has happened according to Krishna's plan. That's all. It was this whole churning the milk ocean, everything, is that something which Krishna wanted to do as a play? That's what in the Bhagavatam says. That it's just a play Krishna wanted to have. So when Krishna wants to play, he plays in a much bigger scale, and that's what he did.
But the thing is, third question is, when Lakshmi and when Mohini Murthy was there and you did the comparison, because that was figuring in my mind before I was going to ask you.
Yes.
When Lakshmi came, both the demons and the demigods were affected. Yeah, because they both wanted to marry her.
Yes.
When Mohini Murthy was there, she was even more beautiful than Lakshmi. And you described that scene where Lakshmi just bowed down, feeling ashamed. But when Mohini Murthy came there, only the demons were affected, not the demigods.
No.
So why is there a contradiction?
The reason for that is demigods knew it's Krishna who has changed this form into Mohini Murthy. Demons didn't know that. Demons thought it is some new person has come. That is Krishna's Maya. This is the way Maya works. When Krishna wants somebody to be affected by Maya, nobody can say how that Maya is going to affect that person. Demigods were not affected by Maya because Krishna had shown that mercy to them. That when Krishna took the form of Mohini Murthy, all the demigods have never felt that Mohini Murthy is going to marry them, or that desire even never came up to their mind. That is Krishna's mercy to them. One second. On the other hand, the demigods completely got affected by this beauty of Mohini. And they didn't even think about Krishna at that. Everything has gone from their head. All they were seeing was Mohini, nothing else. Totally focused on this one and form. And that is how Krishna cheated them. Krishna was cheating them every second. And nobody could do anything about it. This is the nature of Maya. Vedavyasa is saying here, Krishna's Maya is difficult. Why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Devi Hyesha Gunamai Mama Maya Duratyaya Mamevayam Prabhadyande Maya Medam Tarandi Devi. Krishna himself saying, no one ever has tried and succeeded in getting over this Maya. There is no question at all. That is how powerful this Maya is. If you read Ekadasi Skanda in the 11th canto, you will see there, while instructing Uddhava, the first in the Navayogis, the nine sages, when they came to the Nimi Maharaja's palace where the sacrifice was going on, Janaka Maharaj asked a question, what is Maya? And there is a whole description of Maya there. And if you can understand, you can understand all that of the activities of Maya, you will never doubt about the presence of Maya in this world. That's how Maya is.
Is Murthy and Mohini actually worship? Do we worship in this world?
Mohini's form is not worship, but in many, many big temples, this form of Mohini is carved on the temple walls for people as a pastime, to see the pastime for people. The churning of the milk ocean is a pastime shown in almost all the big temples. You go to, for example, I don't know in the north, but in the south, in Tirupati, for example, Ranganatha temple, and many, many places, you will see this particular pastime is carved or painted on the walls, just to show that how this past incident happened, because it's a very important pastime. And people, you know, see that form, and Mohini's form is pictured there in that pastime. But generally, there's no temple as such built for Mohini. I haven't heard anything about it.
Okay, but where it's actually described in the Bhagavatam that the Lord form is worshipped in all different forms. There must be some kind of form Mohini Murthy.
Yes, but there's another form which comes later. I'll come to that later when we talk about it. Yes. Mahalakshmi came from the ocean. Mahalakshmi didn't come like Mohini. Mohini, as Krishna, has transformed into that form. But when the different objects came from the ocean while churning, like Kaustubham, prior to that, Kamadhenu, the cow, Uchaishravas, the horse, Airavadam, the elephant, Kaustubham, the jewel, and Parijadam, the tree, for which the demigods took. Many of them demigods took. Some of them demons took it away. So Maharishmi came from the ocean. And Maharishmi came, they thought she is also one of the demigoddesses, or you can say divine personality. And seeing her beauty, and also not purely because of her beauty, the grace, and also the way all the sages glorified her, gave impression, understanding to the demigods that she belongs to their category, divine category. So they would like her to join them into the heavenly planets. That was the reason. Is Maya. No. The way it is Haso Unmada Karija Maya, Jananinja Maya, it says like that. Sri Shukan says to Parikshit, when Krishna is smiling, people think, oh, Krishna is smiling at me. That's what we think, isn't it? Everybody who comes and stands in front of Krishna, you can see always in the temple room, people come, stand there, and they look at Krishna. And after seeing Krishna's beauty, they are so much affected by that, they don't want to go away. They want to stand there as much as they can. And when they start looking at different parts of the body, Krishna's body, starting from the lotus feet, when they come to the Krishna's smile, they start thinking, Krishna is smiling at me now. Everybody feels that. Any devotee will feel that. Sri Shukan is warning to Parikshit that don't take for granted that smile. That smile is a very devious smile. Because it is that smile that has put a lot of people into trouble, starting from Hiranyakashipu onwards, right up to everybody. So he says there, Sri Shukan says to Parikshit, Hasam Unmada Kari Ijamaya. Maya comes out when that smile comes out. Maya starts affecting the person. So therefore, in other words, what Sri Shukan was telling to Parikshit, that while surrendering to Krishna, one has to be so conscious that Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we, tiny living entities, we have nothing to claim from Krishna. It's only by Krishna's grace we understand what is Maya. To understand Maya, we require Krishna's mercy. Otherwise, we don't understand what's Maya. Just to show that how powerful Maya is, that everything comes from Krishna, including Maya, comes from Krishna. And that Maya, material energy, what we call, is so powerful. Prabhupada explains it many times. And how powerful this material energy is, difficult to overcome. He says, why? Because of this, that we think that everything can be adjusted in this world. But when it comes to Maya, Krishna says, no, don't try to do that. You will not succeed in that. That's why it's called like that. Yes. That is the next story. I think if we have to talk today, it won't have time. So we'll keep it for next Sunday.
And he was sometimes was got stuck. He said, how can I got affected this lady? Right? But that was arrangement. She's supposed to be wife. So
yeah.
That was clarification later on, but otherwise, and I think that those times they not even by mind. Otherwise, he used to like get attracted like how nowadays. So, like all the demigods, they got. Lakshmi's appearance
yes.
at a particular time, like time of Charming the ocean, is not appearance. Lakshmi was already there. Right?
Yes.
So, and those who got attracted, like all the Sukracharya, Raspati, or all the day, because they are not like ordinary souls. And Lakshmi is not a particular, that is the appearance time. So, how they got attracted by Lakshmi means they wanted to marry as Lakshmi.
Long question, I couldn't fully get it. How they got attracted to her?
Yeah, because that time was like not like now.
Yes.
Like in the time.
Yes, yes.
And they were very qualified.
Yes.
They are not ordinary souls.
Mm.
Lakshmi's appearance was not their time.
Let me explain that. In that marriage, how did that marriage happen? This is the first question, right? The marriage happened like this, that when Mahalakshmi came out from the ocean, some people wanted to marry her. Some demigods and some demons wanted to marry her. Not the sages. None of the sages had any intention of marrying her at that time. But what happened was, because it was becoming an issue there, there is a system of marriage called Swayamvaram. Swayamvaram, you understand what I mean? Swayamvaram means that you have the sages who were present there, they said to they decided this, that after all, this is a young lady. Mahalakshmi is a young lady who has come. And that means what? Means that she has the intelligence to make the right decision as a young lady. Because normally understanding is that men are all stupid. They don't make right decision as far as marriage is concerned. But women generally do. And therefore they decided that among the Kshatriyas, this practice exists. They handed over a garland to her and told her that you can decide and marry anyone whom you like in this assembly who are present here. So all of them were sitting there. All the demigods were there, the demons were there. And in addition to that, all the sages who were there, they were also there. So Mahalakshmi was walking around with the garland in the hand. And it's compared like this, that just like if a lot of people are sitting, you take one lamp from one end to the other. When the lamp reaches some person, his face gets illuminated, isn't it? From the light, from the lamp. But as soon as you finish that person, the person's face becomes dark because there's no light there anymore. So similarly, when Mahalakshmi was moving in front of all these great soul personalities there, everybody was thinking that maybe she may like to marry me. And that was their mood at that time. But in the Bhagavatam says that she rejected every single one of them for one reason or the other. And eventually she decided to marry Krishna himself. And that is how that marriage happened. Now, why everybody wanted to marry her? The reason for that is that nobody knew her, where she came from. She came out from the ocean. Like, first it came Kaustubam, Parijadam, and so many other things, many valuable things came out. Now, Mahalakshmi is the predominating deity of all the opulences in this creation, right? Aishwarya Devada, she is called. There is 8 opulences, major opulences, Ashta Aishwaryas. Somehow or the other, for some reason, I don't know why it is, if you read the 8th canto, 8th chapter, 8th verse is Mahalakshmi appearing. That's also another interesting thing in the Bhagavatam. It looks that Vedavyasa's deliberately kept there the appearance of Mahalakshmi in that verse. Because she is the predominating deity of all the opulences. And the major opulences are 8 in number. So it seems to me that that 8 has some significance there. That in the 8th verse of the 8th canto of the 8th chapter, Mahalakshmi had to appear in the Bhagavatam. You see? So when she appeared, all the others thought she is also looking at her. They all felt that she is very noble and very great personality. So they wanted her to marry them. And naturally, everybody would like it. But at the same time, she made her own decision at the end. This is how it happened. Not clear.
No, just missing point is, compared to that cave, all the demigods and all the person they was there, it was very special.
Yeah.
More qualified than that king.
Who was more qualified?
The king, Pururava.
Pururavas, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when the Pururava in the forest, there was a lady.
Yeah.
And he got attracted, his mind was agitated.
To Urvashi, yes.
Yeah.
Urvashi. Yeah.
But he was thinking, why my mind? Because time was so pure that time, you know.
Yeah.
How I got attracted?
Yeah.
This is not in our
yes.
dynasty or, you know, like this. Without any
yeah.
reason.
This topic, Pururavas and Urvashi, we have to discuss it when it comes to that, because that's a long subject. 11th canto.
No, no, but how this thing came in their mind of demigods to marry, Saint Mary, or how? Because
just like it comes to our mind. Yes. No, time is, you are thinking in terms of Satyugam, Kadayugam, Tridayugam. No, these things are happening at a different place where these four yugas have no effect at all. The four yugas are here in this planet, Kadam, Trayada, Dwaviram, Kali. It's not in the heavenly planets. There is no Kaliyugam in the heavenly planets. You know what I mean? Similarly, where this incident happened, churning the milk ocean, happened in the ocean of milk, which is in the Plakshadvivam. It happens in another place altogether. There is no Kaliyugam there. There is always a good times only. But why this has happened there, that there is no answer. Because it was such an activity going on there. Seeing Mahalishmi's beauty, in heavenly planets also they are enjoying. Not that all sages live in heavenly planets. Heavenly planets, demigods, enjoy a very high standard of material life. That is the fact. And they, because they live such a material life, high standard means what? All good-looking people with great opulences. That is their lifestyle there. And that is what has happened here. It has nothing to do with the time at all. Kradem kradam traida dvaviram kali, that is in this planet, what happens, or what we are going through. We shouldn't put these conditions to them, and this time and this thing happened. And not only that, this didn't happen in this day of Lord Brahma. It happens in Chakshusha Manu's time. In the same day, but Chakshusha Manu's time this happened. The sixth Manu. We are on the seventh Manu's time. So time-wise, you can't compare today and when this incident happened. Think about it. You will find it logical.
Just three questions. Constantly the demons and the demigods that were fighting with each other. Mm. The distribution of the objects that came out of the journey of the milk ocean, was there a sort of a rule or some sort of stipulation who got what? What were the conditions? The second point of the question is that the demons must have realized that the demigods have now got the nectar, and they instantly, when they found out that they were not served the nectar, why did they go ahead with the...
Okay, I'll first, the first question, right? When different objects came out from the ocean, who has to make the decision? Krishna has to make the decision, because it seemed was done the work, everything, neither the demons nor the demigods. So what he did was, not to upset anybody, he started saying, Krishna decided, when Kamadhenu came, he told, demons were not showing any interest. They were not so concerned about Kamadhenu. Seeing the taste of the demigods, Krishna said, you can have Kamadhenu, take Kamadhenu to yourself. But when the horse came out, Ucheshravas came out, the demons wanted that. So Krishna told the demigods, hand over Ucheshravas to them. You will get something better than that later. And that is when Airavadam came out, the elephant, he handed them over to the demigods again. And then Kaustubham came out. Kaustubham came out, Krishna say, looked at it. And when he looked, glanced at it, both demigods and demons thought that after all we should give something to Krishna. After all, he has done all the work. So they decided to make a necklace out of it and put it on Krishna's neck. And that is how Kaustubham came in there. Then there was Parijadam. Parijadam came out. Demons had no interest. Demons said, what Parijadam? They were more interested in getting their jar. So they were thinking, let's see what else is going to come. They were not interested in Parijadam or anything. Send back to the heavenly planets. And as soon as Varuni came out, demons didn't have any second thoughts about it. This is what we were looking for, they said. That's like, you know. So immediately, the Krishna said, yes, that's what they need. Send it to them. Varuni was sent to them. And then came Lakshmi Devi. So you can see it's all decided by Krishna's arrangement in different ways according to the taste. And also Krishna had this in his mind very clear that let the demons will destroy themselves with this Varuni. Varuni is considered to be the topmost brand, whatever that is. So they were satisfied with that, apparently, Varuni. And after Varuni has gone in, it started working. And that's why when they saw Mohini, they thought Mohini should be ours, nobody else's. This comes from Varuni. Varuni will be followed by Mohini. Mohini will form the like that because of this. That's also there, indication is there, that how the Varuni started working in the, because it was Krishna's plan that Varuni will start developing its own potencies. And it did. And that is why demigods had no difficulty with that. Whereas this has affected the demons. What was the other question?
The second question was that the demigods already had the nectar,
mm-hmm.
and the demons didn't. So
yes.
Why did they go to the fruitless walk, which they knew they probably would lose anyway, because they regained the strength.
Why did the demigods start fighting?
Yeah.
Sorry, the demons start fighting?
Why did the demons start fighting? Because they knew
yes.
they were going to lose.
They felt they were cheated by Mohini. And they realized it was Vishnu who has done this. Because normally demons have this fear of Vishnu all the time. And Vishnu uses the Maya and tricks them all the time. In Hiranyakashipu's case also same thing happened. So when they felt that they were tricked by Vishnu in the form of Mohini, and when they realized it, they got really angry about it. That they were, you know how you feel, if you feel that you were cheated by somebody, how do you feel? Everybody feels that, isn't it? Oh, he had a go at me and I've been, you know, taken for a ride. That feeling came up to them very strongly and they wanted to take revenge straight away. And naturally they thought that Krishna was siding on the side, taking the side of demigods and doing this to them. So they decided to kill the demons, demigods, and they wanted to fight then and there. They broke out and that all happened after that.
You mentioned that these four yugas, they appear on this planet.
Yes.
They don't appear on other places.
No, there's nothing to do with the heavenly planets. Heavenly planets are not affected by this four yuga. These yugas are only for us here. Kodam Treda Dwavaram Kali is only in this planet. It doesn't.
Planet only.
Yes, in this planet, yes.
I read somewhere in Prabhupada's book that we're in the smallest universe and there are about 100,000 plants in this small universe.
100,000?
Plants in this small universe. So
right like that.
Sorry?
There is a 14 planetary systems here. For example, we have higher planetary system, middle planetary system, lower planetary system.
Right.
Higher planetary systems, Swargalogam, Ghorlogam, Janalogam, Tavolagam, Satyalogam, Brahmalogam, they all belong to the higher planets.
It means a loka, it means a planet, isn't it?
Yes. A loga means it's a cluster of planets.
A cluster.
And some of them are gross, some of them are subtle planets, which you have no access at all. You can't access there.
Right.
Similarly, middle planetary system, of which Earth is one of the planets. There are other planets in the middle planetary system. Lower planetary system, Adalam, Nidalam, Sudalam, Taladalam, Dasadalam, Padalam, they all belong to the lower planetary systems. Now my understanding is in none of these four yugas happen. This happens only here, in the earthly planet. If you can show me where Prabhupada said that, it would be nice. I would like to read it. If maybe I may be wrong. My understanding is like this.
Well,
if you know where it is, you just let me know. I will try to...
It's one of the small books of Prabhupada. Anyway, what I'm saying is that... these four yugas affect us only.
Yes.
On this planet.
Yes.
It doesn't affect other planets.
No, it doesn't affect. No. That's my understanding, yes.
I've got one question.
Just one second.
It is said that during the fight for the nectar between the demons and the demigods, some drops fell on as well. Some drops of the nectar
yes.
fell on this planet.
Yes. It fell in the sense that it is that poison which has come out from that Kalakutam which has fell down is the poison in this world, what we call as poison. Poison in this world is present in the snakes, scorpions and the plants, certain plants which are poisonous. So that poisonous element has come from the drops that has fallen from this Kalakuta Visham. The poison what has come out from the nectar.
I think he's talking about, you know, the four drops of nectar. So that's why the...
Oh, that is the nectar that has fallen. It's not the poison. Yeah, yeah. The nectar that has fallen was being carried away in the pot. And at that time, in four different places, the drops have fallen. Ujjain, Haridwar, Prayag, and I think it is Nasik. Four places. And it is in these four places that they have the Kumbh Mela.
All this has happened millions and millions of years ago. You can imagine, you can't give a date to it, you can't give any record to it. People are following it because people have faith in that all this has happened. I mean, everything in the Bhagavatam is like that. If you want to understand, I'm again saying the same thing. Don't try to understand Bhagavatam the way we try to understand our history books. You will not get anywhere. When Sridharacharya Swamiji is saying like this, that who am I to understand Bhagavatam? He is asking this question. A personality whose commentary on Bhagavatam is considered to be the most authoritative and accepted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. And that personality is saying, I cannot understand Srimad Bhagavatam. So what are we? What are we going to understand? We can ask all questions, but we may not get an answer today. But Mahaprabhu's, as well as, because it is the history of the whole creation. Srimad Bhagavatam is the history of the whole creation. It is not digging the earth like our archaeologists do. That is not this. Bhagavatam is not the archaeologist's history. Bhagavatam is the history coming from the Supreme Personality himself. What he is telling us, this is how the whole thing came into existence. This is what we perceive today. And the many things we don't see, many things we don't know anything about it. So as much as understanding we get it, we have to feel a little bit satisfied. What can we do? That is the way it is. Srimad Bhagavatam is Purana Mamalam, purest of among all the Puranas. And what is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam is Paramahamsa Dharmam Amalam Jnanam Param Giyade. The highest of the knowledge is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And when we don't understand, we should not be surprised about it, because the knowledge in the Bhagavatam is also the highest in the Vedic literature. You can see the relationship with the Vedas and the Bhagavatam, that so many prayers in the Vedas has come into Srimad Bhagavatam as well. So Vedavyasa Maharshi, when he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, he had this clear concept in his mind that he had to get the import of all the Vedic literature through Srimad Bhagavatam and presenting Krishna as the absolute truth. And that's what he did. And that's why it remains as a mystery, and it will remain as a mystery for us for many, many lifetimes. That is how it is. And so many things are like that. We cannot, to some extent we will understand something here and there, but in a detailed way to get an understanding is difficult. Yeah, there is this incident of this drops of nectar falling. You can read in so many articles. You can read how this Kumbh Mela came into existence. Kumbh Mela's origin is from there, so you can imagine how old Kumbh Mela is then. How many years it dates back to, and people are still coming. And last Kumbh Mela was so grand that so many millions and millions came for that. Ujjain, it is going to happen in Ujjain, yes. So, one of the Kumbh Melas, but everything what Krishna has set up works properly. It never fails. In this Kumbh Mela, no matter how different philosophers, philosophical schools are there, they all come there. Why? Because there is one thing which is binding all together. That's Vedic literature. That's why. They belong to different schools of thought. Sankhyam, Yogam, Vaisheshikam, Vedantam, Purvamimamsa, Uttaramimamsa, everybody, from all different aspects of Vedic literature, they come from there and they come together. Why? Vedic literature binds them all together, which shows clearly that this is the literature, original literature, which has been in existence in this planet all times.
Okay. This is the life question. I like giving life questions. 11th canto.
Yes.
One of the conclusions that Krishna actually gives is that you should actually offer obeisances to all living entities, whether they're demons,
yes,
or,
yes,
or
yes,
saints or anything,
yes, yes,
even the ant on the street.
Yes,
yeah, that's
yes,
the conclusion. He tells various ways to actually attain him and remember him. Yeah, and I've got this doubt which I'm really confused about. So if I had your telephone number, I would have called you. but what the doubt that I've got in my mind is, yes, I can actually understand that. Yeah, he's in every living entity, so you have to pay obeisances. Whether the person is good to you or bad, he's there. But the bit that I get confused about is that, one, the Bhagavad Gita was actually done in a situation where it was done in the middle of a war. And then all of the pure devotees that have actually got back to Krishna, like Maharaj Katavanga, in a moment's instance. If you looked at his life, he was a warrior fighting demons. And where Krishna is actually giving instructions, pay obeisance to all living entities. And there are, say, warriors that are actually fighting demonic, where Krishna is there themselves. I just find that there's a conflict of interest. It seems quite difficult where he's saying, this is a conclusion. Is that different instructions to different people? If you become a devotee, pay obeisance to everyone. If you're a warrior, then do your duty and fight.
What you're saying is, why Katwanga was fighting instead of paying obeisance?
There's other examples of other devotees, yeah.
Yeah. Why they're doing that instead of paying obeisance
to everyone
all the time?
Yes.
Yes. That's good.
Because that's Krishna's instruction right at the end of the 11th canto.
Yes. What you have to understand, if you read 11th canto once and twice, you won't understand 11th canto. 11th canto is a very, very, very deep thing. And to understand 11th canto, you have to read it many, many times, and you have to discuss it also, why it is like that.
Yes.
When Krishna said, you should pay your obeisances to all the living entities, there is a lot of things which goes before that. First of all, you have to start seeing Krishna in every living entity.
Yes.
After that, you start paying obeisances to them.
Yes.
Right? And in the Krishna says there that the that won't happen very easily to see in every living entity presence of Krishna. Even this morning in the class, that's what was discussed. How do we see Krishna everywhere? It's very easy to say, see Krishna everywhere in all the living entities. Go and see Krishna everywhere. You can say this to everybody else. But it doesn't happen like that. There is a process for that. It is for that reason. In the Bhagavadam as well as in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's opulences are discussed. Do you know? Krishna's, there is a two chapters in the opulence of the absolute.
Yes.
In the, I think it is the 8th chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. And in the Srimad Bhagavadam, there is also lot of opulences of Krishna is discussed.
Yes.
Why is it discussed? What was the reason of discussing all Krishna's opulences? Does anybody has to convince us that Krishna has got all these things? There must be a reason behind it, isn't it? The reason for... Sorry.
I think the reason is that you can meditate on that.
And do what?
And do chapter.
Now, there is a specific reason behind it. The reason is this. That before you start seeing Krishna everywhere, in all the living entities, first of all, you understand who is Krishna. So to understand Krishna, Krishna says, first you start seeing me in all the great things in this world. First thing, first step. That means you start seeing Krishna in Arjuna. Viranam aham Arjuna. If you see Arjuna, you should not think it is Arjuna who is important there. It's not Arjuna who is important. It is Krishna who is present there doing that great job of Arjuna. That great, the heroic nature of Arjuna, it is coming from Krishna. That is how you have to see it. Right? So if you see in Arjuna or in any great personality, anything great, yad yad vibhudimal sattvam mamai tejomsha sambhavam, Bhagavad Gita says, that every time you should see that something greatness, some great thing if you find in anybody, you should immediately think it's coming from Krishna.
Yeah, I understand.
Now, let me come for that. When you start seeing that, if you develop that habit, first of all, we are not even developed that habit. What do? If we see something greatness in somebody, we try to pull him down straight away. First thing, this is our greatness. This is how we are. Reality is like that. If somebody has done something great, immediately, what we will do? Oh, what's so important about that? We'll make a comment straight away like that. This is human nature. In this world, that's all what you find. So, first of all, develop that, Krishna says. Second thing, that means you see Krishna in Arjuna, Krishna in Uddhava, Krishna in Lord Shiva, Krishna there is a number of them mentioned, Anjaneya, Hanuman. See, different qualities of Krishna in all this. It's a number of them listed in the 11th canto.
After that, Krishna says, once you have started seeing that in all of them, and your mind has matured enough to start appreciating Krishna in all these living entities, you start thinking about other living entities. The other living entities you start thinking about. For example, every living entity in this world, Krishna has left some of his opulence in them, in every living entity. So wherever you find Krishna's opulence, not to the degree like in the case of Arjuna or the great souls, great personalities, but to some degree, even if you find some opulence in every living entity, you start respecting that, Krishna's presence in that living entity. So first you start with the great personalities, then you move on to other living entities. Now, in that process, you will even notice that trees, plants, and animals also have certain potencies from Krishna. For example, you know, I'm just giving one example. Some of these plants, which are grown in Himalayas and all that, and in many of the mountains, they have got medicinal effect. And the majority of the medicines are extracted from these plants. Although scientists take credit for all these things, thinking that, oh, we invented this and we have given you this medicine. Oh, we have conquered cancer. Oh, we have conquered this, we have conquered everything. There is nothing that we are not conquered. The only stupid thing they don't understand is, who put these things there in the first instance? Krishna says, I have put them in these plants and trees. That is Krishna's opulence there. Every single plant from which very, very valuable medicines, which everyone is happily using it today, it is we are using, Krishna has put that opulence into that plant, and that is what we are getting it. So what happens? First you start respecting them, now you start respecting the plants. Now you start respecting the trees also in a similar way. Similarly, many of the animals as well. In different animals you will see Krishna's some potency there, which you have to accept that it is Krishna has given to them as a special opulence that has been given to that particular living entity. When your mind has accepted all these things, and when you have started realizing it is Krishna who is present in all these living entities, trees, plants, sages, devotees, everybody, you will realize that in everything, Tvanna Kinjil Prabhanje, the whole creation is nothing but Krishna. That realization will come very strongly. It is then that you start paying obeisances to all these living entities. Otherwise, what will happen is, you will pay obeisances to one elephant. Say for example, elephant is coming to hit you. You are not seeing Krishna there, you are seeing the elephant there. Elephant will finish you up because you have not realized anything. All you have is understanding that Bhagavatam has told me to pay obeisances to everybody. So I will go pay obeisances to this, that, everybody. No, you should only do that after this realization has come to you. That is the system of paying obeisances. There is a lot of things in the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially in the 11th canto, when you read, that is the language of the sages. And you can only understand it through the devotees who have studied and heard and understood and discussed and analyzed it. Only through their mercy you can understand. If you simply read the verses and translation and purport, it will be very difficult to grasp what exactly is coming through that. That's the problem. No. Whatever I know, I will talk about it. But you have to read. You have to go listen to personalities who have studied Srimad Bhagavatam like that. There are many personalities still who know Srimad Bhagavatam, who have much more deeper understanding. If you keep studying and if you're chanting Hare Krishna, all this will come one day. That's what Krishna is saying. That without, if you continuously chant the holy name, these things will automatically come. Krishna will give you the understanding from inside. Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhaktya Bhagavadam Yayam Navilpatya Natigayam. Not by intelligence, not by my effort, I can understand Bhagavadam. Bhagavadam, knowledge will come from inside when Krishna reveals that to you. That is why the whole process, Srimad Bhagavadam is saying only one and only one thing. If you chant Hare Krishna regularly, steadily, every day, day after day, and with purity, maintaining the principles, eventually, the holy name will reveal the secrets of Srimad Bhagavatam. Why? Srimad Bhagavatam is the holy name. The Srimad Bhagavatam is nothing but Idam Bhagavatam Namam. Holy name is the one that is glorified in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Puranam Brahma Samhitam. Lord Brahma has approved it. And the conclusion of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the last verses. You can take it in the 12th canto. Look at the last verses. What does it say? Bhave bhave yadha bhakti padayor stava jayade tadha kurusha devesha nadastam no yada prabho nama sangirtanam yasya. Chanting the holy name. Sarva bhava pranashanam. It will take away all our sinful activities. Purify us. Pranamo dukkha shamanam. All distress will go away. Why? This knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam will come out from the person. And then he has no doubt what to do in this world. All the doubts goes away. Pranamo dukkha shamanam tam namami harim param. And all the distress, not only it goes away, he pays his total obeisances to Krishna at that point. That this is the perfection of the studying Srimad Bhagavatam. But the process goes on. It goes on for the whole lifetime. If you read, understand, think about it, whatever you have read and heard and listened, think about it a lot. And also discuss with people, like-minded people in the Srimad Bhagavatam. If you get an opportunity or personalities who have mastered or studied Srimad Bhagavatam for a longer period of time and who have a deeper understanding, discuss with them about Srimad Bhagavatam. Try to use the opportunity to talk to such people who have such knowledge and from them learn Srimad Bhagavatam. Let Bhagavatam live through life. And one day it will show its understanding will come.
Okay, just one last question if you've got the time. Because these are live questions.
Yes.
You know, I can talk about questions about what you read, but this is another live question. It talks about deity worship, yeah?
Yes.
And what I was amazed about is that when I actually read this, it says that when you're actually doing deity worship, you have to transfer the super soul from your heart into the deity,
mm-hmm.
and after the end of the worship, you bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
And I only got that from the Srimad Bhagavatam. No one's ever said that to me. And I don't know whether my wife is actually doing it when we actually do deity worship. I actually got that from there. But surely that is one of the most important parts of someone should have actually relayed that. You know, we're doing deity worship at home. And
can we?
Could we not do that?
No, you're not wrong. Your question is also right. And what you are doing is also right at home. The Vedic system of deity worship, there is three types actually. Vaidikam, Tantrikam, Visham. This particular one, what you have discussed now, talked about, invoking the deity from the heart, invoking Krishna from the heart into the deity.
Yes.
That is known as Avahanam. This process is called Avahanam. And bringing back from the deity, Krishna back to the heart again, is called Udvasanam. So Avahanam and Udvasanam is a part of that Tantriya Vidhi, deity worship. So you will notice if you take Srimad Bhagavatam and read through, when it comes to Tantriya Vidhi, method of worship, that is where all this process comes in. Our process, what we follow in ISKCON, is not that process.
Yeah.
Our process is Pancharatriya Vidhi. Pancharatriya Vidhi is a different process than Tantriya Vidhi. It's a completely different process.
Okay.
To discuss that in detail, we need some time. So we'll keep it for the when we come to the deity worship part of the 11th canto. Yes, please. She didn't drink all the thing. She drank a little bit. Yeah, but she was supposed to be serving first. But she took it first. And she said that I'm not so open-hearted that after working so hard to hand over the result to somebody like that. So freely. That was Mohini Murthy's attitude. That time. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
It started 2 years ago.
Two years ago.
Yeah. Because we just started the process. We need someone.
Yes.